The February 19th, 2002, two sessions devoted to Purim. Two sessions devoted to Purim instead of Minchat Chinuch and the Sefer HaMitzvot. 2002.
Parashat Zachar coming up. It's the only Kriyas Torah that is required by the Torah. I'll talk a little bit about for a little bit of a break in terms of our normal topic. We know, of course, that one fulfills on Purim, in addition to the mitzvah of Purim generally, one actually fulfills on Purim the mitzvah to eradicate or remember the eradication of Amalek. Magen Avraham writes that if a person misses Parshas Zachor, they should have kavana on Purim to be yotze with the Kriyas HaTorah of Vayavo Amalek. So if we think about what it is that on Purim we celebrate, we really celebrate two things. We celebrate the notion of the downfall of Amalek, and we celebrate the Pursume Nisa, the miracle of HaKadosh Baruch Hu saved us. I'd like to talk about those two ideas of Purim. You know that Chazal have enacted that 4 weeks before Pesach, we have four special Shabbosos, Parsha Shkalim, Parsha Zachor, Parsha Parah, Parsha Zachayvish. Two of those Shabbosos, Shkalim and Zachor, predate Purim. So I want to talk about that. I want to talk about how Parsha Shkalim and Zachor are a precursor to being able to experience the redemption of Purim. We know that the Pasuk says, the Gemara says in Megillah, that why do we read Parsha Shkalim or Shreda Shabbat? Because every Nisan you have to buy korbanos from newly collected Shkalim. Right? Every year you have to give a Machta Peshejo. And starting from a Shreda Nisan, you have to buy your korbanos from new Shkalim. And that's why we start collecting them on Adar. The Gemara gives the following reason. Goloi v'yadua, it was well known, with name Isha Amar v'haya Olam, b'nef Hashem, that Haman would try to gain victory over the Jewish people by giving shkalim. So Hashem said, now to give shkalim to Ahasuerus, Hashem said, let us give our shkalim first to counteract the koach of Haman's shkalim. And that's why Haman gave shkalim to kill the Jews the 13th of Adar. We give our shkalim first from Rosh Chodesh. That's what the Gemara says. In other words, our shkalim are supposed to counteract Haman's shkalim. So you might ask a very simple question. What do you mean, our shkalim counteract Haman's shkalim? Haman's shkalim were given to Ahasuerus. Our shkalim were given to Hashem. And what does it mean, our shkalim are earlier than his? I mean, his shkalim were given thousands of years ago. Our shkalim were given now. What is the meaning of our shkalim overpower his shkalim? And the Sfarim tell us that the explanation is the following. We know, of course, that the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not mentioned in the Megillas Esther, the only book of Tanakh, perhaps Shir HaShirim as well. It depends on whether Shal HaVesya is one word or two words. But short of that, Megillas Esther is the only sefer that clearly the name of Hashem is not mentioned. And yet there is a Messiah that the Mephoshim bring, that whenever it says HaMelech, without anything more, it refers to Melech Malchei HaMelechim HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So what that means to us is that whenever you read a pasuk of the Melech, there are two things you think about. There is the simple meaning, in which there's a flesh and blood king. And then there's a higher, deeper meaning, in which that is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So consider the pasuk. When Haman talks to Ahasuerus about Yizera and the Jews, the pasuk says, "Vayomer Haman Lamelech." Haman says to the Melech, "Yeshno am echad." There is a nation, Mefozer Meferet Ben Ha'amim, that is scattered. V'daseim Shonos Mikalam, and their laws are different; they don't mix. V'yastase Hamelech Ein Amos, and they don't keep the laws of the king. And it is not worth the king's trouble to keep them alive. That pasuk has double meanings. On one level, it is a flesh and blood Haman talking to a flesh and blood Ahasuerus, making the argument, why keep the Jews alive? They're scattered, they're ineffectual, they're powerless, they don't mix in, they don't have respect for the king, as the Gemara says. If a fly falls into their wine, they just throw out the fly and drink the wine. But if the majesty king touches the wine, they throw it away. That's one meaning. But there's another meaning. Vayomer Haman Lamelech doesn't just mean a flesh and blood Haman is talking to a flesh and blood king, but what it means is that the koach of Amalek that Haman represents is arguing with HaKadosh Baruch Hu that the Jewish people do not have the spiritual merits to be able to survive. In other words, Yeshna Yam Echad Mefozer Meforward is not just the taina that the human Haman has to the human Achashverosh, but it's the kitrug, it is the prosecution, it is the accusation that the spiritual power of Haman has to Melech Malki Hamach. And in that way, the taina of Mefozer Umefored doesn't mean, as it means in the human context, that because they're scattered, they're weak. But it refers to the quality of disunity, polarization, sinas chinam. Meaning to say that when we talk about eradicating Amalek, we are not just talking about the Amalek that's outside of us, an enemy. We are talking about an element of Amalek within us that we have to destroy. It is only if one is mochet, the Amalek within one's soul, one can then vanquish the Amalek outside. Because the emes is like this. The emes is Amalek that represents evil and ra has no koach over someone that is connected to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Meaning to say, if there's no Amalek within me, there's nothing that the Amalek mibachutz can get hold of. But when there's the Amalek mibifnim, then the Amalek outside has something to grab onto. And therefore, the power that Haman has over Klal Yisrael is the power that Amalek has over Kedusha. And that power is the power of Mephazer and Mephazer ben Haman. The Achilles heel is the Sinas Chinam, the Pirut, the polarization, the animosity that one Jew has towards another. And that is what gives Amalek a koach over us. So one basis, but we know of course, that Edom, Esav, the Romans that destroyed the second base of Mekesh, also come from Esav, just as Amalek does. And we know that the Churban Bayis Sheni came from Sinas Chinam, and the Kayach of Amalek also comes from that Sinas Chinam. In fact, many Meforshim say that that is the meaning of Chazal. Chazal say that Ein Zare Shel Amalek Naitol Ela Bidei Zera Rachel, that Amalek can only be defeated by the children of Rachel. Amalek cannot be defeated by the children of Leah. That's why we find that the first war against Amalek was waged by Yehoshua ben Nun, Moshe ben Ephraim, who's Mizera Racha. That is why the first king who was given the commandment to wage war against Amalek was Shaul from Binyamin, Zera Rachel. That is why when Shaul didn't do it, David HaMelech was not able to do it, because the ability to be Miskaber over Amalek is Malchus Zera Rachel, not Zera Yehuda. That is why Mordechai and Esther, who are descended from Binyamin, are able to have a power over Haman that is descended from Agag, the king of Amalek. That is why there's a Mashiach ben Yosef prior to Mashiach ben David, because the goal of Mashiach ben Yosef from Zera Rachel is Lahachris Zarei Shel Amalek. Now, sometimes it's from Yosef, sometimes it's from Binyamin. That needs some more explanation. The Chazal say, any nitzachon over the koach of Amalek must come from the idea of Zera Rachel. And why is this so? Because if Amalek has power over us, it is because of the hatred and the pirud haleid that exists between Jews. Well, all of the Zera Leah that were mishtatev and mechiras Yosef exemplified that hatred, and therefore Amalek has a power over that. It is only Zera Rachel. Number one, Rachel herself, her act of selflessness, giving her simon. Remember, Yaakov had made up a prearranged signal with Rachel so that Leah shouldn't be switched. And lo and behold, Rachel gave up that signal. Rachel, in her love, in her compassion, in her desire that her sister should not be humiliated that night, was willing to give up so much. And indeed, it was a tremendous thing she gave up, because she didn't just give up that first night or that first week. She actually condemned herself to die, because the Rambam explains that since under the law of the Torah, you're not allowed to marry two sisters. Even though the Avos kept the whole Torah before it was given, they only kept it in Eretz Yisrael. They didn't keep it in Chutz La'aretz. So Rachel knew if she would be the second wife, if she would be the sister of the wife, she would die as soon as they enter Eretz Yisrael. But she exemplified her love and her concern That is why Yirmiyahu says, Rachel Mevachal Bana is Rachel that will bring the Geula. And the children of Rachel, Yosef and Binyamin, did not have hatred and animosity towards their other brothers. And the Mela, Amalek, can only be defeated by the Kayach of Abbas Yisrael and Achdus and unity. Because otherwise, we have the Amalek within us, which gives the Amalek outside of us that Kayach. In this sense, Machzis HaShekel is said to be a preparation to be Masake, the Mephizer, the Mephirad. I'm sorry, before I get to that, that's why by Purim, when Esther is finally convinced that she should go in and speak to Ahasuerus, actually the first thing she tells Mordecai is, Lech Kno, says Kalayim, go and gather all the Jews. Because she recognizes to be Miskaber over Amalek, there has to be Achdus. That is why when we're finally saved from Haman, Chazal recognized that the way we celebrate is by rectifying the power Amalek has over us. And that is why the mitzvahs of Purim are so makushar with Achdus and Avos Yisrael. Shloach manos nishlareyeh. Gifts to the poor, food to people, to share, to come together. That's why by Shalach Manas you're supposed to have a shaliach. Why do you have a shaliach? It's better for you to get another person to deliver it instead of you delivering it yourself. Because the goal of Shalach Manas is to create friendship and good feelings. And the more people are involved, if three people are involved instead of one person, two people rather, that's Marbe Reyes, that creates friendship. Of course, I'm going to remind people that the Rambam says right halacha l'maisa that it's better to give more matanos le'avyonim than sholach manos. So one shouldn't necessarily be able to have to give. Sholach manos is ish l'reyeu, two pieces of food to one person. Okay, so hakila it should be two different brachos. So it shouldn't be two oranges. So if you have an orange and a cookie, that is sholach manos. Or an orange and a banana. An orange is a for Pesach, sometimes people might appreciate not getting so much chametz shalach manos. But be it as it may, the holy site of the mitzvah of Purim are to foster unity and togetherness. And why is that so connected to Purim? Because Purim came, or the kayach of Amalek came, because of Mephozar u'mephorad be'ha'am. And therefore we can overcome that Amalek only if it's leich knos. In that sense, Machzis HaShekel is a precursor to teach us a lesson in Achdus and Avos Yisrael. You know, every single year, a person is supposed to give a half shekel for the korbanos of the Beis HaMikdash. And the Torah says it has to be a fixed amount. Ha'asher lo yarveh, a rich person cannot give more. Ha'adal lo yamek, and a poor person cannot give less. How do we understand that? Vishlama, I understand a poor person can't give less. We want to be sure everybody gives at least half a shekel. But what's so bad if the rich person wants to give more? I've never heard of a yeshiva that would basically say, you're not allowed to give more. It will always take more. Even when you pay taxes. There are people who actually send, there's a provision for this in federal law, I've never met anyone that does this. If you want to send a voluntary donation to the federal government, there's a special fund to retire the national debt or whatever it is, but people send money to the federal government beyond their taxes. So why does the Torah say the rich cannot give more and the poor cannot give less? And fundamentally, this teaches us a lesson in the equality of every person in the eyes of Hashem. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu looks at every Jew, particularly maybe every human being, but certainly every Jew, with an equal level of love and care. And even if one person has the koach to accomplish much more in the world, spiritually, and the other person doesn't have that koach. They're both the same if each person gives what they can give. Meaning to say, if I give 100%, someone else gives 100%, the fact that it's different makes no difference because each person is judged. I think marathon runners often say that they're not really running against another runner. They're competing against themselves. That's the emes. The only competition that there is in being a Jew is competing against yourself, trying to be what you are, trying to realize your potential, trying to recognize your uniqueness, your individuality, your kohos, and not, as it were, to look at others and say, oh, they have this and that and that and that. And therefore, the Machzis HaShekel says, the poor and the rich doesn't mean just in money. The poor might mean a person who is poor in spiritual talents. And rich might be a person who is wealthy in spiritual talents. But Hashem says, as long as you give everything that you have, you are equal in equal. So if one person can learn 100 Bar HaMorah a day, another person learns 1 Bar HaMorah a day, each one is working to their capacity, they're equal in God's eyes. And moreover, if the guy that can learn 100 learns 20, and the other person who can learn 1 learns 1, the one who learns 1 is more beloved. Because he's given 100% of his ability, the other has only done, even though he's done a tremendous amount objectively, but he's only given a fraction of his abilities. The Ma'bid says, in Sefer Beis Elokim, that this is the meaning of Gemara Kesuvos. Gemara Kesuvos tells us that when Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi was niftar, so he went, not niftar, but he had a near-death experience, we would call it today. So his neshama went to Olam Ha'emes, and when he was revived, he was asked, what did he see? And he said, Olam Hapuch Reis, I saw a topsy-turvy world. I saw Elyonim, those who are very high and elevated in this world, Lamata were at the bottom, Itachtonim, and those who are very low in this world, Lamala were very high. Now, Ma'bid explains, what do we mean by Elyonim and Tachtonim? We don't mean Elyonim are rich people, and Tachtonim are poor people, because that's Pashut. Why would there be a Hava Amina that just because somebody was rich, that should mean anything in and of itself? The Ma'bid says like this. Elyonim and Tachtonim refer to spiritual dependents. People who seem to have been spiritually greater in this world. And people who seem to have been spiritually not so great. Because we look at people by objective criteria. We look at one person who, let's say that I'm using Shalom from Numa HaTorah, but many examples. I look at one person who knows half of Shas, and another person who only knows one block. And I say, one that knows half of Shas is obviously a more accomplished Talmud Chacham. But Hashem looks at how much of your effort did you engage. And it might be the person who we think is not as good. In fact, in Hashem's eyes, it's much better. That's the idea of Elyonim. So the Machzis HaShekel, the uniformity of the Machzis HaShekel, the uniformity of the Machzis HaShekel, reminds us of how each of us stand in equality before God, as long as we give our attention. So that's one aspect. Now, by definition, that helps you address the issue of Mefozo and Mefori Benahavi. Because so much animosity comes because of jealousy, because of envy, because of being dissatisfied with the allotment that Hashem gave us. And therefore we look at others with criticism and negativity because we feel bad in comparison to others in various ways. But if the Machzis HaShekel reminds me of my uniqueness, my individuality, my equality in front of God, and it also means I look at you and I see your equality before God, then that itself is an antidote, a preventive measure for the lack of unity, polarization, and synaschina that exists. But there's another phenomenon in the Machzis HaShekel. Not only is it uniform, which connotes the message of equality, but it is also a half, it is a fraction. Meaning the Torah didn't say everybody gives a shekel, the Torah says everybody gives a half a shekel. And it is the nature of a half, that a half does not become a whole. A half does not become a davar shalem unless you are mechaber it with another half. That reminds every person that my avodas Hashem is going to be incomplete and defective except to the extent I connect myself with others. And that's actually a very simple reason. Because if a person needs 613 mitzvahs to have a relationship with God, there's no person that can do them. Some of them are men's mitzvahs, some are women's, some are kohanim, some are mitzvahs to Leos Biarets, many are mitzvahs that apply only in Eretz Yisrael, this man ha-mikdash. So how can I have that relationship with God, no matter how big a tzaddik I am? And the answer is, I as an individual cannot have that relationship with God. But to the extent I connect myself to a transcendental entity called Knesset Yisrael, which is a past, present, and future mitzvahs of eternity, then the mitzvos of the unit become my mitzvos. Just as if I do something with my right hand, I don't say, this was the action of my hand. Rather, this was my action because my hand is part of me. When I make myself part of Am Yisrael, then the actions of Am Yisrael are my actions. And Memela, without that Achdus, there could not have been a Kabbalah Satorah. And therefore, in a way, the two ideas of the Machzus Hashem almost run in a slight contradiction to each other, because the equality idea is a reminder of my individuality, my uniqueness, my special mission, my ability to do great things without regard to others. But the fraction of the Machzus Hashekel emphasizes my interdependence and my need to connect to others. Both of them are antidotes to the Mephozar or Mephora thing. So this is what the Gemara means when it says, Goloi v'yadua, Hashem knew that Haman would try to bribe Achashverosh with Shkalim. What does that mean symbolically? In effect, that the Koach of Amalek would be able to bribe, to be makadreg to God, by saying the Jewish people are not worthy, by Mephozer and Mephoreh. So Hashem gave us the mitzvah of Machzus Hashekel to overcome the disunity, and thereby be able to be Malka Amalek, a Lefua before the Maka, that we have in every generation. So that is what Machzus Hashekel is. Machzus Hashekel is an antidote, a preventive measure, for it helps us deal with the problem of Achdus, the lack of Achdus, Sinas Chinam, polarization, by the fact that the Machzus Hashekel is both equal, everyone do the same, and it's also only a fraction of it. But a Derech Agav, just as a little digression, we talk about fractions at whole. The Kli Yoker makes an interesting observation about Melechas HaMishkan, nothing to do with the Shkalim at all. He points out, if you look at the Midot, if you look at the dimensions of the Aron HaKodesh, you see that each of the dimensions of the Aron HaKodesh are fractions. Amah Sayim V'Chetzi, or Ko, 2.5, or Ko, Amah V'Chetzi, and Amah and a half, Rachbo, Amah V'Chetzi, Tomato. Now, if you look at the Shulchan, which had the Lechem HaPanim on it, you will find that some of the dimensions are whole Amos, and some of them are fractions. Tzas and Shleimot, and Tzas and Shavuot. So the Kli Yoker says a very beautiful idea. We know that the Aron represents the symbol of Torah knowledge. When it comes to Torah knowledge, I should always feel that I'm lacking something. I should never feel it. There should always be a feeling, I need to learn more, I need to do more, I need to grow more. One should never say, I've learned enough. I've learned enough. Now, the Shulchan, which is the showbread, that's a remnant to Parnassus. The blessings of material sustenance come from the Shulchan. That's why the Gemara says that if you want to pray to Hashem for wisdom, you should turn towards the south, which is where the menorah, the light of Torah, is. If you want to pray for wealth, you should turn towards the north, because that is the Shulchan. So if you're turning towards Yerushalayim, but it should be northeast or southeast. Of course, I always tell my shulchan that Woodside congregation, because of the construction, the Aron HaKodesh is facing two more. So we have to reevaluate our priorities, right? We're just praying for Ashiras. We have to turn around to the south. But be it as it may, when it comes to Parnassus, there is a concept of the opposite. One should be happy with what they have, and one should learn to be mistapeh, the muat. That's the remez that Kli Yoker says, that even if your economic parnassah is shavur, it's broken, you should have the attitude in the lathe as if it's shalem. So one part is shavur, one part is shalem, meaning in your life it looks like it's shavur, but your mindset should be it's shalem. And he says very beautifully, that's the meaning of the Gemara. The Gemara says, Hamitzpalel, Mitzpalel, Einav lamata, velibo lamala. That means, daven, your eyes should look down and your heart should look up. So he says the following. When you're davening for Parnassa, your eyes should always look at the people who are worse off than you. Meaning to say, don't look at the people who are better than you, because then you'll get jealous. Look at the people who are worse off and be grateful for what you have. But when it comes to the lathe is the desire to understand Torah, you should look at the people who are greater than you, and therefore you want more and more Torah knowledge. Okay. But be it as it may, this is why Machzis HaShekel is a very good hachana towards Purim, because it addresses the idea of Mufozar and Mufolad Bein Ma'amin, which is the land of Achas. Now let's go to Parsha Zohar. Parsha Zohar, obviously, is even more directly concerned with the Kalach of Amalek, because it talks about Mechias Amalek. So how does the Torah describe Amalek? It says, Zohar Eitz Asher Asalof Amalek, remember what Amalek did to you, Baderech Mitzaytchem in Mitzrayim, when you had left Egypt. And the Pasuk goes on and says, Asher Korcha Baderech. They encountered you in the way. Now the word Korcha is a very critical word. Many Svarim say that Amalek represents the idea of Mikra. Mikra means things that happen in the world are not because of God, they're just accidents, they're happenstance, they're coincidences. That Amalek is that power that refuses to see Kedusha in the world. By the way, according to that, it's very important. You know, we like to bandy around Amalek. According to that, you know, one should not identify something like even the militant Islam, which is certainly evil. Not all evil is Amalek. In fact, the evil of Islam is bound up in their use of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in nefarious ways. That's a very different evil than Amalek. Amalek is the koach that does not want to recognize the hand of God in the world. Amalek is korcha, mikra, as opposed to the Arab thing, which is really the koach of Yishmael, which is a different type of wrath. That's the sitra achra of using spirituality for evil ends. It's actually a different thing. You can't really lump together Amalek with all of these things. But be it as it may, Rashi says from Chazal that Karcha is a lashon of coldness. That when Bnei Yisrael left Mitzrayim, they were like a scalding hot bath. And everybody was afraid to touch them. But what happens? Amalek jumped into the bath. Now, the first person who jumps into a boiling bath gets burnt. They got burnt. But what happened was, they made it cooler for everybody else. Amalek showed the world that you could attack the Jewish people. We lost, maybe next time you'll win. They're a little weaker. Rav Tzadok touches up Korcha the same way Rashi does, but he gives a different twist. Korcha means they made you cold, and he says the following. The Amalek inside a person is what is called Kriras Halev, the coldness of the heart. Rav Tzadok writes that it's possible for a person to keep all of the mitzvahs, and externally he is doing everything right. But in his heart, there is coldness, lack of passion, indifference, boredom. Of course, this is nothing new. Yishayahu the Navi. Mitzvah tanashim ilumadam. A person does mitzvahs out of blind habit. You're an automatic pilot. And Rav Tzadok says, again, Rav Tzadok acts interestingly enough, was born in Mizrahi. He was raised as a Mizrahi. He became a Chassid precisely because of this concept of this fire in the spirit. The story goes that he went. Actually, it's a whole interesting story. I don't even know all the details. Apparently, Rav Tzadok got married at a very young age, and for whatever reason, he wanted to get divorced. And I don't even know the details of that. And his wife refused to accept the get. So there was a Hetzer Meir Rabbanim that was involved. And as a result, he met most of the Gedolim in Europe. And he once wandered into the Ishbitzer, Meshiluk. And the Ishbitzer was speaking to Sulish Nishis. And Rav Tzadok was like he does. In the middle of the speech, he started crying. There is a fire burning in my heart. There's a hot brand here, a coal here. And somehow, I don't even know what was said at that particular occasion. But Rav Tzadok became a devoted Talmud of the Ishbitzer. And although he was recognized as the greatest Talmud Chacham among all the Hasidim, in fact, he was brought down, Rav Tzadok never ate a meal that wasn't the Suras Mitzvah. So he would do a Siyam Masechta before any meal. So he would do two or three Masechtas a day. He would not eat unless it was a Suras Mitzvah, unless it was a Bris that day. And he would go to a Bris or the like. But for 30 years, Rav Tzadok did not speak in public. He said he was there to learn for 30 years. Toward the end of his life, he became a rabbi himself. But anyway, Rav Tzadok writes very often about this. And this is something that we have to confront in our own lives, lives of our children. The concept of the coldness. And we talk about problems that modern Orthodoxy faces, Central Orthodoxy, whatever the designation of the week is. The names always change. When the center is the modern integrative synthesis Orthodoxy, whatever the phrase is, the primary issue that we face is not so much halachic observance. We can produce generations that will go through the technical observances of halacha. But do we create people that have the feeling, the passion, the excitement? Is it possible for us to do? Can we make a Shabbos table more exciting than a Super Bowl? Can we make a lot of Gemara more interesting than a computer? And if the interests were moving the other way, we've created what is called a kriyas halev, a coldness of mind, an indifference of mind. Rav Tzedek says, that is the koach of amalek, kriyas halev, asher korcha b'nefesh. Rav Tzedek then goes on and says, what is the factor in our external environment that creates that coldness of mind? So he says, it's an over-involvement with materialism. Now here one has to, of course, define the term. Judaism as a whole is not averse to enjoying the physical pleasures of the world. In fact, on some level, if a person repudiates and denies themselves those pleasures, that's considered to be a chait. The nazir is a chaita because he deprives himself of wine. The Talmud Yerushalmi, I mentioned in my other shir, says that a person is going to be called to account for every pleasure they could have enjoyed in this world. You have to let me go. As it were. Rav Shimshner Val Hirsch used to say that Hashem is going to, of course he lived right near Switzerland, Hashem is going to ask you, why didn't you climb the Alps? I put them there for you to enjoy. How could you not enjoy them? Right? In a way it's arrogant to say, I don't need Hashem's bria. I'm happy where I am. But we also have to admit that although one should enjoy life, one should take pleasure in things. Victor Miller has a long essay on about how to eat a banana in his classic essay. Think about a banana based on the Chavos HaLevavos, the Shaha Bechina, in which you think about the peel, the fruit, and the smell, and the fragrance. In fact, one of his great themes all the time was the notion of being grateful for the beauties in the physical world that you're living. Use this as a springboard to appreciate how much more you make a bracha. The story I read is an amazing story. His granddaughter once came into the house and she found her grandfather with his head underwater in a sink, kitchen sink. So she was really horrified. She called him up and says, Eddie, what are you doing under the water? He said, well, I was walking with somebody and they were mad, Flatbush, and they were mad. Well, the air quality isn't very good. And I felt bad that he said that, because I always felt myself so grateful for the air. And now I didn't feel so grateful. Then I said, really, it's a pretty lousy day today. So I wanted to be sure I would be grateful for what air is. I put my head underwater to feel what it's like not to have air. And then when I picked my head up, I realized, Baruch Hashem, the air is not so bad. Not so bad as I thought. These were exercises in Hakara Satav. He was an extremist in that way. I mean, he really felt that he once said, in order to be great, you have to do extreme things. But be it as it may, all of that is true. But we have to admit that the more invested we and our children are in stuff, things, material, even if it's all halakhically permitted, black kosher, everything's permitted, the less sensitive our hearts are going to be to the beauties of God. Because just as people who play computer games and need instant stimulation might find it much more difficult to read even secular literature, right? After Nintendo, William Faulkner is not, going to be hard to do. Just as one who is raised on junk food will not appreciate the niceties of the delicate French cuisine, whatever you think. The more we're involved in the instant gratifications of the physical, the less our hearts are going to be open to look at this. And that's why we have the constant notion that we find a real constant problem that parents face in an affluent culture, that things are never enough. People are not enough food. we have the problem, but all of us, we have this phenomenon of just not being satisfied, like a bottomless pit. That is in a constant state of never being satisfied. In fact, I heard on NPR, an interesting thing, there's a little story about kids spending their allowances. So, there's a 13-year-old and his 8-year-old brother, and they were discussing together what their habits were. The 8-year-old, as soon as he gets his allowance, he spends it. But the 13-year-old said this, I go into the mall and I look around, but I never buy anything. So the reporter said, why don't you buy anything? Said, because I know as soon as I buy it, I don't want it. I have the desire to own it, but that desire is going to leave as soon as I have it. So I simply look, and that ultimately is going to be more pleasurable for me than actually buying it. Right? So that's the kind. Now this is a very perceptive remark. It's 100% true. You're just not right. There's the. So the point is this. As we get more involved in acquisition, we have less shifa for the ruach. Therefore, Rav Tzadok says that what Parshas Zachor is beckoning us to do is to learn how to simplify our life, to learn how to pare away that which is not essential, to focus less on materialism and that which is more meaningful and enduring. And generally speaking, to try to create a life which is not predicated that much on acquisition and on just general physical pleasures. Again, not to the degree of being an ascetic, that's not being terror, but to simply recognize what our priorities are. The Breslov has the concept that when a person really looks at the fact, he talks about wealth. So the person walks outside and he looks at Central Park and says, gee, this whole park is mine. Can't really go in a lot of Central Park, but the point is that, there is so much in the world, the air and the water and the flowers and the plants, belongs to you. And appreciate it in that way instead of saying, I have to possess this. So therefore, Rav Tzadok says the following. Rav Tzadok says, if Parsha Shkolim teaches us unity and achdus and togetherness, Parsha Zohar is a reminder to disengage ourselves from materialism, which creates a krirut halev, a coldness of the heart. And that is why we find, by Amalek attacked us in a place that was called Refidim. And Refidim is an acronym, Chazal say, Rafu Yadayim, our hands were weak from the fall. What is the phrase Rafu Yadayim? When you care about something deeply and with passion, you hold on to it tightly. When you're indifferent, you hold on to it loosely. Rafu Yadayim means they were keeping the Torah, but they were holding on to it lightly. It didn't make a big difference. And that is why, when Purim came, and we were saved from Amalek, we re-accepted the Torah out of love. Right? The first time we were forced into it, the second time we accepted it out of love. Why is that so? Because when you're forced into it, you do so without enthusiasm, without passion. That's Rafu Yadayim Korcha, coldness. When you do something out of love, you do it with enthusiasm and zeal. So now you see, here's the point. If Purim celebrates the downfall of Amalek, and if in order to defeat Amalek, you have to eradicate the Amalek inside of you, and the Amalek inside of you takes two forms, Sinas China and Kri Ritalei. So now you see how Purim is masaking both of those things. The Shalach Manos and Matanis Le'Avyonin foster the unity and the Achdus, which we learned from the Machdus HaShekel, and the Kabbalat HaTorah Me'ahava is masaking the Rafu Yedeihem in HaTorah and Asher Korcha Baderech, which is the coldness and indifference that Amalek has. And therefore, in effect, the Hachanos before Purim, Parsha Shkalim, Parsha Zachor, give us the wherewithal to eliminate the two Achilles heels that are within us that give Amalek that shleita. And, Mr. Shevishtal, it's over to incorporate these two lessons. I just want to add, too, Chazal say that the first Kabbalah Satira we were forced into it. Now the question is, the Medrash Tachum asks the question, how can you say we were forced into it? Didn't we say Naseh V'Nishma? We said Naseh V'Nishma. So the Medrash Tachum gives the answer that Naseh V'Nishma, the willing Kabbalah, was Torah Shebichsav. But that we were willing to accept. but we were not willing to accept Torah Shabbat Pet. And the Kafa Aleim Harkigigis, that Hashem held the mountain over us like a barrel, that was referring to the Torah Shabbat Pet. So now it turns out, if on Purim we accepted out of love that which we initially accepted out of fear, that refers specifically to the Torah Shabbat Pet, because the Torah Shabbichsav we already accepted out of love. Now the Medrash Tanchuma says, why didn't they want to accept the Torah Shabbat Pet? Because it was too hard. It takes more work to understand, to apply. Like the Torah Shabbat Pet has the creative process of applying the Torah to new situations. They had Rifyon Yadayim. They were weak. They didn't have enthusiasm. Without enthusiasm, you don't have that desire to work. Therefore, Purim is to overcome that lethargy, that sloth, that laziness, that lack of passion by a Kabbalah Satara Me'ava. So Purim therefore addresses both the lack of unity and the lack of passion and excitement. And therefore, in effect, it deals with the Amalek inside, which can overcome the Amalek outside. So I wish you all a great of Purim, also a safe Purim. And the Gemara says, Yachael Belay, maybe you're Makayim Belay, and the Weimar, Leitishkach is Belay. Now the Torah doesn't say you have to do it once a year, once in your life, or every day. So what is the makor that you're mechuyev to say to do Parsha Zachor b'peh once a year? Because Chazal say Ein hameis mishtakach min halei ela adyud beis chodesh, that you forget a mace after 12 months. And therefore, a memory becomes less vivid and less alive once 12 months passes. So you are mechuyev to mention it every year, so there shouldn't be a lack of zechira, a shichach. Now, the Chassam Sefer says a very interesting deal. The Chassam Sefer says, Chazal did not say, Ein hameis mishtakach min halei ad shana, or achar shana. They use the term yud beis chayesh. The Mela, by Shnas or Iver, it'll still be Yud Beis Chodesh. It doesn't get changed if it's a leap year or not a leap year. So the Sam Sefer says a big Kiddush. Let's say, like this year, Parshat Zachor is the year before a Shana Muveret. Like next year is a Muveret. So it turns out that from Parshat Zachor to next Parshat Zachor will be Yud Gimel Chodesh. If it'll be Yud Gimel Chodesh, I will be in a state of forgetfulness by the time next Parshat Zachor comes around. So because of this, the Chassam Sofer says, you are mechuyev to have kavanah this year when we read Parshas Kiseitze before Rosh Hashanah to be mekayem Parshat Zachor, the Baal Korah should be told as well, in order that you shouldn't go 12 months without a zechira of Amalek. Of course, say the Sheikh Sechira to the Yotzi anyway. So I got the whole Shaila, because what emerges from the Gemara is the following. What emerges from the Gemara is the Torah would require that there be a Zechira once a year, and the Torah requires that the Zechira be Bepeh and not Belay. But the Torah does not require Befeirish that it be the Shabbat before Purim, for sure. And there's a big machlekes, does the Torah even require that it be a ketiva b'sefer? Does that have to be from a sefer Torah? Could I be mekayem parshat zachar from a chumash via rice? Now it's true that it does say in Mishalach, Kisov zosi karon b'sefer, b'sim b'yaznei Yehoshua, ki machal em b'sefer amalek. But the kisov zosi karon b'sefer is not in the same pasuk as zachor, eis asher aso l'cha amalek, b'derech m'teis chum Yisrael. So you should know that there are many, many shittos that say that the chiyuv of reading Parsha Zachor from the Sefer Torah is a drabana. It's not necessarily a
derech. אנחנו זוכרים את מעשה המלאק במילים שלנו.
כן, זה אותו הבעיה. האם נניח שמן התורה אין צריך לקריאת התורה, אז ממילא יוצא שיכול לקיים את המצווה במילים שלנו. שש זכירות. אפילו בלי הזכרת הפסוק. אבל אם אומרים שמפני הפסוק כסוף זוז זיכרון בספר זה חלק ממצוות זכירה, אז צריך לקרוא בדיוק הפסוקים של בפרשת כי סייצר. וזה תלוי. Now, the Magen Avraham actually writes, I mentioned this before, that if a person didn't hear Parshas Zachor on Parshas Zachor, he should go to Shulchan Purim and have Kavanah to be Yotzei Parshas Zachor with the Kriyas HaTorah of Vayavo Amalek, which is the Kriyas HaTorah in Beshalach, in Shmos. But there are those that are Cholik of the Sem Sofer, because they say that even if you can be Mekayim Parshas Zachor with a different words, you have to read or you have to say verses that talk about the Chovat Zechirah. In the Kriyas HaTorah Vayavo Amalek, it does not say anything about Zachor. The Zachor is only in Kiseitze, the Zachor is not in the Shem. But being as it may, we have this mitzvah once a year called Zechirah Samalek. Now the question is, are women Chayavos in hearing Parshas Zachor? We know that women are generally petuchot, many exceptions, from a mitzvah taseh shazman gulama. Now, on a doraisa level, Parshat Zachor is not zman gulama because it could be any time of the year. Yidrabanan is zman gulama. So the question is, are women chayavos or petuchot? Now, as you know, over the years, the minhag of most religious women would also mean you have to have a minion for Kriyat HaTorah. Because simply pulling out a Sefer Torah is not a Kriyat HaTorah. Elamai, the question would be Midrabanan. What I'm saying is that many opinions the Oraisa say you're Yotzei with the Chumash.
If you would need a Torah
min haTorah, you would not need a minyan. That would be correct. As I say, there are many opinions that don't require that you have to have a Sefer Torah.
That's right.
It's only Drabanan. Now Drabanan, you already need a minyan.
Yeah.
Okay, but be it as it may, the Sefer Achinuch has a chiddush. Sefer Achinuch actually says, Nashim are petuchos from the mitzvah of Zechirah Samalek. This is not our minhag. Nashim are petuchos from the mitzvah of Zechirah Samalek. And the reason is, the Sefer Achinuch says, since Nashim are lav benot milchamah, since they are not expected, they're not mechuyav to wage war against the Amalek, they are patur from the mitzvah of remembering them. Chayra, there's a kasha. There are two different mitzvahs. There's a mitzvah of Mechiyat Amalek, which is part of Dinei Milchama, so women are exempt from Mechiyat Amalek. But just because you're exempt from Mechiyat Amalek, what does that have to do with Zechirat Amalek? What about Kohanim and Levi? That's right, in the same kash. So apparently, what is the Chinuch Shiva? The Chinuch Shiva is that the Chiyuv of Zechira, in a technical sense, is in order to be prepared to wage milchama. So those who are patur from milchama are patur from zechira. So then you have your kasha. What about kohanim and levim? So the emphasis is, even for women we have this problem. The chayra, what is the svara lav benayis milchama? The Gemara tells us that by a milchemes mitzvah, afilu chasan mechedro, the kala, it's very negative women in the army. And as the Gemara said, that all of the exemptions from milchama only apply to milchemet reshut, and not a milchemet mitzvah. Mohammed Mitzvah, everybody goes out. Afilu Chasam Mechadrel, the Kala Mechupata. And since it's a Dover Pasha that the war against Amalek is Vada in Mohammed Mitzvah, so for Kerit, women should even be Chayedas in Mechiyah. And then call the Chayedas Mechiyah. So, as you know, I'm sure over the years we've gone into the issue of women serving the army, the combat, and the like, and many Mephorshim assume for Dover Pasha that the din of Kala Mechupata does not mean that the woman actually engages in combat, but she's in the back lines, cooking or preparing or whatever needs to be done, secretarial service. In other words, Chazal did not envision that the Torah was the Tzavah and women's don't come. And that's what the Chinuch is apparently assuming, and the Chinuch says, since Nachim are not with the others, in Mechiyah, there's Lav, the Nochama, they're not with the others in Sefer. But what about your Kasha? Your Kasha is a Vazai, a Hanan and Levina. So that's an interesting question. Is a Kohen or a Levi Nifta from Mochamet Mitzvah? Now, the truth of the matter is, the Gemara does not say, there's no Gemara that says, Kohanim and Levi'im are Pachas from Mochamet Mitzvah. The Rambam writes at the end of Hilchos Shmita V'yayda, where the Rambam glorifies Shevet Levi as the Meshorsim of Hashem, the Rambam says, Einam Yaitzim L'Milchama V'yola. And I believe he says, Lo L'Milchamis Mitzvah. This is the exact question, because there's a Chiddush. It's really a very big Chiddush in the Rambam. So this is a bit of a chiddush. Lo orchin milchama. He doesn't say the feirish. Bein milchamet kashus. Bein milchamet mitzvah. Then, of course, what gets more controversial is, after the Rambam says Shevet Levi doesn't make milchama, he then says, V'lo Shevet Levi bilvad, elakol ishvish mibaye olam asher nadvar ruchal, a person who wants to set himself aside to serve Hashem, has the status of Shevet Levi. So this is actually the whole mucker. If the Rambam says that a Levi is not Yosei milchama, and if the Rambam says a person could be like Shevet Levi, so this is where you get the whole debate, the very, very emotional debate regarding B'nai Yeshiva, Hester, and the other yeshivas, etc., whether you do serve in the military, whether you don't serve in the military. But the MS is, this is actually a very big critic. The statement... The question is, the Rambam statement that Shevet Levi does not fight the Milchama,
even that someone who wants to make himself like Shevet Levi, they doesn't get that sort, that's even further from.
Well, you know, it's a double, yeah, that's a double. But even the Etzem Din of Shevet Levi is very difficult. And does the Rambam mean when he says, well, again, what does the phrase mean? Lo or chin milchama kisha'ar Yisrael. I mean, even that's an ambiguous phrase. It means they don't organize in war like the rest of Yisrael. Meaning, maybe they do fight in war, but they don't fight like the rest of Yisrael. They do, you know, they do something a little different. It doesn't say they're punching the gun. So this is a big problem. Now, you are correct that if you learn, actually they say, the Mephorshim say that there is no Makor in the Babli or the Yerushalmi. Some Girsos of the Sifri, there's a Makor. But it's ambiguous. It's not a clear Makor. But you are right, I would think, that if you accept the Rambam, and you combine the chinuch shita, that anyone that's not Yosei or Mochama is pater from Zechirat Amalek, you have a kasha of Kohanim and Levim. So we have to say that the Sefer HaChinuch, who correlates Zechirah with Mechiyah, would not agree with the Rambam that Shevet Levi is not Yosei or Mochama. You wouldn't be able to hold up. So this is in the shita of the Sefer HaChinuch, a big chiddush, that according to the Sefer HaChinuch, Nashim are Peturos, at least Minat Torah, from Parshas Sachar. They don't have to come and hear it. And as far as you know, even the Rabbanan. And the truth of the matter is, it's interesting that this Chumra, that all women try so hard to hear Parshas Sachar, was not that practiced in Europe. And it's funny, it's kind of, I guess in Eretz Yisrael, women try to hear Parshas Sachar from Rishon Yatzai. So I won't say it's an American thing, but it's more of a recent innovation. It was not always that Parshas Sachar you had to hear, because the Chinuch had to be asking, women are Peturos from Zechirat on the left.
But do we know that in Europe, women did not go through?
Well, I'm sure there were many different practices, but it seems that women did not make a special effort. And maybe you'll say, because more Amoratic, maybe it wasn't because of a Shiki they didn't have to go. But people from Europe say that, you know, they didn't make a special announcement giving to the doctor to go to show about that. Now, I'm not going to say they specifically avoided children. If a woman went to the base of Knesset normally, she would go by Tetzachar as well. But they didn't make a special effort. They wouldn't go in the house. Of course, there are a lot of possibilities, by the way. But one possibility might be that maybe the women were so much on the opinion that you could fulfill Parshas Sachar from the Chumash, or from the Tzemel Arena, even a Yiddish book or the like. Maybe they were Makayim Parshas Sachar, but it didn't have to be the Sefer and with a minion. Now, with this, the Marcheshev, who is a great Dayan in Vilna, has a very, very interesting and beautiful hesder of a Pesach of the Baal Hilchos Gedolos. The Gemara tells us in Daf Dalet and Megillah, Nashim Chayavot to Mikra Megillah, that women are chayavot in Mikra Megillah, even though it's in Mitzvah Sechus Mangurama, Sha'af Hein Hayu Yotam Ahem, that they themselves were beneficiaries of the miracle. The way Rashi learns it, it doesn't just mean they benefited from the miracle, but it means they were the Ikar Anes. And the Gemara says, Af Hein Hayu Yotam Ahem by a lot of things. The Gemara says it by Ner Hanukkah, and the Gemara says it by Arba Kosam. Af Hein Hayu Yotam Ahem. Three places where the Gemara says the Sephora to override the Patur of Zman Gevama is Ner Chanukah, Dalet Kosov, and Mikra Megillah. Kosos asks the Kasha, Sufen and Sufen, that the Gemara says that why are women obligated to eat matzah? Because eating matzah the first night of Pesach is a positive commandment that has a set time. And the Gemara says because we compare the positive Kriya of matzah with the prohibition against eating chametz. What do you say? Lo sochal alav chametz, shivat yamim sochal alav matzot lechem olmi. So we darshan, whoever has the negative prohibition of not eating chametz has the positive mitzvah of eating matzah. So Taisus asks the Kasha, why do I need a hekesh to be mechayev women in eating matzah? Let's use the same svara as Dalit Kosis. Atein Hayu, he also anes. And it also means, not only were they saved, but they were the eager anes, because Biskut Nashim Sukkaria, because of righteous women. There was a redemption. After all, Dalit Kosis, I use that svara, so why don't I use that svara for my... So Tosfos gives me, it's a very important answer, that Atein Hayu, he also anes, is not enough of a reason on a Torah level to make a person obligated. If a woman is pukkah because of Zman Gerama, you can't override that with the logic of Afein Hayud Yosu Anes. So to be Mechayev women on a biblical level in any commandment, you have to have a hekesh, you have to have a juxtaposition. You can't otherwise invoke the Svara of Afein Hayud Yosu Anes. Afein Hayu B'Yosu Anes only applies when the mitzvah is rabbinic in nature. And the question is, should the Chachamim apply the rule of Zman Gerama or not Zman Gerama? So the Chachamim don't apply the rule of Zman Gerama when it's Afein Hayu B'Yosu Anes. So that includes Megillah, which is Mitrabana, Anshi Knesset Sakhola. That includes Ner Chanukah. That includes Arba Kosos. But Achilat Matzah, we would have to need a pasuk to let him mix them via rest. But be it as it may, the Gemara does say Megillah is one of those things where Nashim Chayava is the Mikra Megillah, because Af Hein Hayu B'Yosu Anes. Taisus brings the Shinta of the Baal Hilchos Gedolos, and we have the Bahagim Sefer HaMitzvos all the time. Here's another controversial ruling of the Baal Hilchos Gedolos, that even if Nashim are Chayavot in the Megillah, a woman could not read the Megillah for a man. Einam Yecholim Lahotzi Anashim. And the Taisus and Erchin explains it with a little bit of explanation, because he says Nashim are Chayavot only in Shemiyat HaMegillah. They are Chayav to hear the Megillah. They are not Chayav to read the Megillah. Therefore, a woman should not be like me. So first of all, what does that mean, you're Chayav to listen and not to read? No one's Chayav to read, but it's a Shemiyat HaOnim. Yeah, but every person. I mean, I'm not chayav to read either. I could be yotzei by hearing. So what exactly is the concept of chayav in hearing and not reading? Now, we know that the general rule is, if a woman is chayav in a mitzvah, like a man, she could do the mitzvah for a man. A woman could make kiddush for a man, because she's chayav as like a man. So what would stop a woman from reading the Megillah for a man? Now, you might argue peripheral things. You might say, well, a woman can't read the Megillah for a man because she sings. There's Kol Isha. You could say if it's a minyan of men, it might be a lack of tzniut. Those are possibilities, but the emphasis, the Baal Hilchos Gedolos seems to suggest, you can learn a different way, that even if it's only a woman reading for her husband, the Baal Hilchos Gedolos seems to say, and even if she doesn't sing, she doesn't read the word, a woman cannot be multi-man. So what would be the explanation? Now again, as I say, some explain it because of tzniyot, the Kol Isha, various other things. But the Marcheshek, who was the chief dayan in Vilna at the time of Reb Chaim Leiser, very great, he was the day-to-day posek of Vilna. Marcheshek, his name is the same, but this was Rav Chanoch Egis. In fact, the Egis family were, Rabbi Egis was a famous Reform rabbi in Baltimore, that was close to his presence, but also a big scholar, but says the following explanation. This is actually fits very, very well. He says, in Kriyat HaMegillah, when the Chazal enacted, this is Rabbanan time, but when Chazal enacted Kriyat HaMegillah, there are actually two things that they were mechayev me to do. They were mechayev me to read the Megillah because of Pirsumei Nisa, to be meshabeach and publicize that Hashem did a miracle. And the second thing that I fulfill my Kriyas HaMegillah is, I fulfill Zechiras HaMalek by reading about the downfall of Haman. So there's Pirsumei Nisa, and there's Mechiyas HaMalek. He says the following. These are two separate kiyumim, these are two separate commandments that you fulfill by Kriyas HaMegillah. Now, in order to fulfill Zechiras HaMalek, you have to read it pateh, you have to actually say the word. But I have a principle, Shomea Ka'onet. In other words, if I hear you reading it on my behalf, then you're saying the word. This Ki'ilu I said it, but the Chiyav is me to say the word. Pirsumei Nisa is not Mechayev me to directly say the word. It's Mechayev me, as it were, to be in a gathering. If I don't say the word, to be in a gathering where the Nes is being enforced. So the Machesha says the problem. When a man reads Megillah, a man is Mekayim, two separate mitzvahs within Megillah. He is Mekayim Pirsumei Nisa, and he is Mekayim Zechiras HaMalek. But according to the Chinuch, and he wants to, the Baha goes like the Chinuch, according to the Chinuch, when a woman reads Megillah, really she should be Pater from Megillah, because it's a mitzvah that says she's Mandrama. What's Mekayiver? Atein Hayu, Bioso Hanes. But that's only Mechayever in the aspect of Megillah that is connected to Pirsumei Nisa. But Lagabe, the aspect of Megillah that's connected to Zechiras HaMalek, women are Peturos from Zechiras HaMalek according to the Sefer Avinu. Therefore, the same way we have a rule that if I'm not Mechuyav in a mitzvah, I cannot be Motzi you in it. Kol she'eino Mechuyav v'davar, eino Motzi es harav mirecho v'asad. So the same thing, if I am only chayav in one aspect of the mitzvah, and you are chayav in two aspects of the mitzvah, it would not be possible for me to be motzi you in that mitzvah, because with respect to one of those aspects of the mitzvah, I'm not a mechuyav b'davar. therefore he's masber the Machashem that the reason why a woman cannot read the Gila for a man is because she is not mitzvah in the Kiyat HaMalek, and one of the Kiyumim of the Gila is a Kiyat HaMalek, and therefore she's not the Kiyavet, therefore she cannot be motzi a man that, because she only has one aspect of the mitzvah of Pirsume Nisa, and the man has two different aspects of the mitzvah. Now you may ask, but wait a second, therefore, is it not therefore a stira in halacha? Because in halacha, we advise women to go to shul, to Parshat Zachar. In other words, we're tofes that women are chayavet in Zechirat Amalek, and yet we also pass through mechatzila like the Bahag, that a woman should not be together for a man. The answer is, we're simply mocked one of both sides, meaning to say, we don't know. So we tell women to go to Parshat Zachar, because maybe the halacha is not like the chinuch, and women are chayeves in Zechirat Amalek. And ain't a chinami, if we knew for sure what the halacha was, a woman could be motzi a man. But we don't know. So we're machmir, and the women go to shul for Parshat Zachar. But at the same time, we're machmir, and we don't let a woman read Megillah for a man, because the man would not be fulfilling his kiyum of Zechirat Amalek, which rabbinically, even though you already heard Parshat Zachar, but rabbinically, you have to have such a kiyum in Mikra Megillah itself. Now with this, Marchesa says a very good finish, which is actually a big liberality. If you learn the Sugya Megillah, you discover that originally the Takana of Mikra Megillah was initially the Yom. It was on the day of Purim. Only from the time of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, who is a very late Tana or an early Amira, do we find Chayav Adam, Likras Megillah Belayla, Belachta, Vishnei Tiyama, even though there's an Asmachta from the Pasuk in Tehillim. But nevertheless, it is brought down that the Takana of the Anshe Knesset Hagdola was to read Megillah the day of Purim, and the din of Kriya Balayla was Midrabanan at a much later date. Now the Marchesha brings from different Rishonim that the Chiyuv of Milchama, Milchama's mitzvah, I don't mean self-defense, obviously, if someone's attacking you, you fight at night, but the Chiyuv to wage war against the seven nations and against Amalek is only by Yayim and not Balayla. That we don't wage Milchama's mitzvah at night. So the Marchesha wants to be Mechadish, that even if it's true that in the Mikra Megillah of Yayim, there are two different mitzvahs, Amalek and Pursume Nisa. In the Mikra Megillah of night, there is only one mitzvah, and that is Pursume Nisa. The Mela is Yitzha in tremendous Kiddush. That if the reason why the Bahag says a woman cannot be mighty a man is because since the woman is not Chayevet for Zechiras Amalek, she's not Mechuyev in an aspect of the mitzvah that the man is Mechuyev. It turns out that the Kriyas Megillah of night, which is only for Sumi Nisa and not Amalek, men and women are equal. So he wants to say a Chiddush LaHalacha, that even according to the Baal Hilchos Gedolos, a woman could be motzi a man in Mikra Megillah Balayla, even though a woman could not be motzi a man with Mikra Megillah Balayla. This is the Machlokes Chiddush. Now, of course, you'll then have the other issues. You'll have the issue of Kol Isha, you'll have the issue of Tzviyot, you'll have all those different issues. But at least if you're talking about a wife doing it for her husband, this would be permitted at night. This is the Machlokes Chiddush. So the shuls that want to be more progressive and more liberal, you know, they could go into it, they could actually debate the loveliness of all of this. But this is the Machlokes Chiddush regarding the concept of women being made to men. Now I understood. I was very surprised and disheartened to read this. You know, yesterday was the conference in Jaffa, Jewish Orthodox Feminist. I was involved a little bit. And you know, actually, Jewish Mahalad was a very fine program, but I just looked at some of the literature that apparently there are shuls, there are Orthodox shuls where women lead Megillah to mixed, I guess I hadn't heard of, to mixed groups, which is a big, big person. It's very, very impressive. But even if you don't cost much to Baha'i, certainly, we would not legitimate the concept of a karuba of men and women as women being Megillah for men. That's what the literature says.
The men and women should suffer.
Yeah.
So why is it any worse? If they sit together, then that's the point. If they sit separately, shouldn't be able to do.
Well, then, at a minimum, there'd be
Kalisha. So we've got to see.
Okay, well, all right. This sounds like a very, very liberal position. But at least
it's ridiculous. Yeah. It's ridiculous.
We probably see that. It's very interesting. It's not so much what activities technically mean a mechitza. Some say mechitza is a chovas hatfila. And if you tell me a tfila, the Kibbutz might not even need a mechitza. The Kibbutz might have been a Talmud Torah. It's interesting. And it's funny that we would be makbid on a mechitza when in fact mechitza might be adopted as a tfila. But
true. You don't hope that someone who goes to even mechitza food and
Yeah, that's correct. So we treat it as common color. On the other hand, the question is, when you have a minyan, there might be a chalos sibur on the assembly, so at that point there may be a chalos sibur. It might be a chalos sibur, one man kneeling for women, and 10 men with some women there, in which there might be a chalos sibur. Well, pashtus minyan is men. There actually is a shayla. There are some sheikhs that say, since men and women are chayavos in Megillah, so you can actually count women and men towards a single minyan. But this is the Marcheshes Eschidish regarding the concept of the chiluk between the Mitzvah Megillah of night and the Mitzvah Megillah of the day. L'chora ze lo bayash, she'im isha shamat at the Megillah in Geber, so the Geber yesh shnei chiyudim, ze lo mafriya, ze lo mishana, and the isha yesh lo atir. She a Geber mechuyav b'chol ma'asha isha mechuyav. So ze lo mafriya. No, I think I have you a question. No, I have you a question. Aval ein bayash, he shamat b'nishim, ze lo mafriya. That is the shiyudim, so dargah shal So, by the way, of course, because of this, it's brought down that when a woman reads Megillah either to herself or to other women, so the bracha would be the Shmuel and Megillah, not only the Shah Megillah, but the Shmuel Megillah, like Shofa, the Shmuel Megillah, which is what we call Shofa, because presuming Nisa is a Chiyuk to be a Shomeya, they'll lock that with the Chiyuk. I don't know if the Bahad, I don't know if the Maheshet had Bahad was published. I don't know if the Maheshet even had a Bahad at his time. And it'd be interesting. We have a Bahad result to see what the Bahad Shuta is. Is the Bahad masculine to the Chinuch? Because the Maheshet's whole explanation presupposes that the Bahad of the Gedolah is following the Shuta of the Chinuch. I don't know if that's true. Now, one other Ha'ara is that the Achreinim ask the Kasha about Tanidesta. First of all, there's a whole Machlokes, what is Tanidesta? We ask Tanidesta. Everybody thinks Tanidesta is the Zecher of the fast that Esther had before she went to Ahasuerus. There's an obvious Kasha. First of all, that fast is 3 days. Okay, that you could say, Chazal didn't want to be machmir. 3 days is too much. But as you know, that fast was not before Purim at all. That fast was before Pesach. Yud Gimel, Yud Dalet, Tesvah, like the first there, or some say Yud Dalet, Tesvah, Tesayim, but the Pashtas, the Yom HaShlishi, the Tovash Esther Malchut, was first day of Pesach. She goes into Achashverosh. So the Chayla, that should be a fast that is in Nisan. So the Torah brings, like this, the Torah brings, that according to some, Tanit Esther is indeed a zecher of the fast that Esther had when she went, not just Esther, all of Klal Yisrael had, before she went to Ahasuerus. But since Chazal do not want to make Nisan a month of fast day, so the zecher is next to the Nes of Purim. That's one answer. The other answer is that Tanit Esther has nothing to do with the fast in the Megillah Esther. But it's a separate, unrecorded fast. The Gemara in Megillah has a lashon that Yud Gimel, 13th of Adar, Saman Tehillah, Makol Nefesman, where the Jews gathered together, Lehikahel, Lamod Amasham. So the Ran brings a Yushalmi that says, this is an amazing thing, that before Jews went to Milchama against their enemies, they were Yoshei B'Tani, that Hashem should forgive them for their Avelos and give them Ezer. That's an amazing thing. You normally think before you go to war, you have to eat a good meal. You have to be strong. You can't be weak. But their Matreda was, and again, I wouldn't say this is halacha today either.
We have an example from the Tanakh.
Right. So you see that when you recognize that you're on a high madrega, and you recognize that Yitzchak is from a Kaddish Baruch Hu, and you know lo b'chayov lo b'koach kiyam b'ruchim, then you understand that sometimes you'll be yoshev b'tanit in the milchama itself. So according to this, the Tanit Esther is not connected to the Tanit of the Gimel Yamim, but it's connected to Yud Gimel Zaman Ki Ila Lakol Lamod Al Nafsham Deri Yoshev B'Tanit. It's interesting, and most people would not realize that the Tanit is because of an unrecorded Tanit that they have. So the Kasha is like this. There are two Kashas. First of all, we know that the Gemara tells us, we have the Gilak Tanit. The Gilak Tanit is a long list of all the Yamin Tovim that were observed during the Bayit Shevi. A lot of different holidays, this event, that event, all sorts of different events. Now we paskin, bakla megilat tanit, chutz mechanika kippur. Meaning, after the Korban Bayit Sheni, all of the holidays in megilat tanit are no longer observed as holidays, except for Chanukah and Purim. So Chanukah and Purim were established as Yomim Tovim in megilat tanit, and that we still keep. Now, the Gemara says in Tanis as well that any day that is a Yom Tov, Megillat Tanit, Asurim Behespei Tanit, you're not allowed to have Hespei, Yuzi or Tanit, not only on the holiday itself, but Bein Milifnehem, Ubein Liachadeh. The holiday of Megillat Tanit, all the holidays, when they applied, you were Asur Behespei before and after. Has been Tanit before and after? The question is obvious. If Purim is a holiday of Megillat Tanit, and if the halacha is Batla Megillat Tanit, Chutz Mechanukah Purim, but Purim is still a holiday that's obligatory under Megillat Tanit, and under Megillat Tanit, Asur Behesped V'Tanit L'Tzeihem U'Liachareyem, how could you have Tanit Esther the day before Purim? You're fasting on the day before Megillat Tanit. Day for a holiday Megillat Tanit. So the whole institution of Tanit Esther is in violation of the rules of Megillat Tanit. Like this is a simple kasha. Another kasha is like this. What is the halacha if, if Purim falls out on Shabbat? So when do you have Tanit Esther? Are you moving to the Thursday? Kasha is, we generally have a rule, for example, if Kishuva falls out of Shabbat, we fast on Sunday. And the reason is, Afdume Koranuta Lo Makdimim. For Koranot, we always make it later, not early. And yet, for Tanit Esther, now maybe you'll say, well, fasting Tanit Esther after Purim wouldn't work out as well. But you see, Tanit Esther, we're Makdim the Tanit Esther, and we're not Ma'acher. Why don't I apply the concept of Abdume Kalanita Memaikum?
When is Purim? Purim is on Shabbat.
Purim is on Shabbat.
But on Shabbat you don't celebrate Purim. Purim is Sunday.
That's correct.
You cannot have the...
So then you would...
You couldn't have the Tanis Esther Purim at the same day.
So maybe you'll make it Monday. Tanis Esther on Monday. Maybe Purim on Monday. Maybe you should, yeah. Yeah. It would be an awkward arrangement. But you do see that you're locked in. So... There's one answer for, so we have two kashas on Tanit Esther, right? One is the kasha, how could you fast before Purim? Kala katub in Gilat Tanit, Asur Lutheskin, the Tanit of Neim Alachonia. And the other kasha is, Afdume Parinuta Lomakim. And the answer is, beautiful answer, the answer is question. Tanit Esther is unique among all the other Tanits in that chapter. Because Tanit Esther is not a commemoration of a Korban. Tanit Esther is a commemoration of Gula. Because what happened? We fasted, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu answered our fast, and He gave us Yeshua, and He gave us salvation. So when do I say, Akitu Ume Paranuta Lomas Gemina? The fast of Tisha B'Av, which is Avelut, which is sadness, which is Korban, in which we have not yet been Zochet to the Binyan Beit HaMikdash. So I don't bring a Paranus earlier than I have to. But Tanit Esther is a reminder to me that Hashem is Shomea Tefilos, that Hashem listens to tshuva. So that's not sad. When I fast on Tanit Esther, what am I sad about? I'm not sad. Rather, it's a reminder to me of the kocho shel tshuva tefilat Tanit. And for that same reason, it is not a violation of the rule of Megillat Tanit. The rule of Megillat Tanit, that you don't fast the day before, is talking about fasting over a tzara. Let's say there's death, there's dever be'ir, there's magefa, there's cherev. So we don't make a fast the day before a Yom Tov from Megillat Tanit. Although even then, if you began a sequence of fasting, you could continue. But a fast that is a nechama and a simcha, in a way, that's not a violation of the principle. So Tanit Esther is very unique. I mean, other than Yom Kippur, which is a different type of fast. But in terms of all the other fast days which commemorate Korban, Tanit Esther is the only fast day that is really a Zecher Lishua. And therefore, that's why it's not a problem. So Mitzvah Hashem, we still have to fast, but Mitzvah Hashem should be a Shua for all of Kalisho, for the good form. So for him, you guys can have Mr. Belkin here. What time is that?
6:30.
Wait, you got Shalom or?
Oh,
Bumska. Oh, you're expecting a big chance.